Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro. And this week, my guest is Tidbits Managing Editor, Josh Centers. Hey, Josh.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, this is your second appearance. I couldn't wait to have you back on the show. We had so much fun last time. And now we're going to talk about something really fun. Talk about home automation. So you are the managing editor of Tidbits, as well as the author of several Take Control books, iOS 11, Apple TV, co-author with Take Control of Preview, and now you've published this new book, Take Control of Home Automation. It's a very interesting topic to me, and I think the listeners want to sort of get their head around home automation a little more. So this is a perfect opportunity. And you've written a splendid Take Control book. It's huge, and it's got so many photos in it, and it's so geeky and technical. And I looked through it, and I went, wow, this is a work of art. So how did you get interested in home automation? Was it something that you had always been interested in and you saw this as a way to just, you know, grasp hold of something and write another book?
No, I was extremely skeptical of it. And it kind of terrified me, honestly, especially, you know, I used to cover for Tidbits. I used to cover the Snowden stuff, the NSA stuff and all that. So, you know, I'm a little paranoid when it comes to computers. But I always heard great things about the Philips Hue lights and people just kept going on and on.
That's what gets us all started.
Right. But they're always just so expensive. Like the starter kit, I think at the time was like $250 for like four light bulbs, which seemed
three,
a little,
I think.
Was it three? Yeah. It was absurd. It used to really be absurd. And then one day I saw some for sale for like $150, and I think it was, yeah, you only did get three bulbs. Yeah, you're right. And so I'm like, oh, what the heck? I had a little spare money from, I think, the Apple TV book. So I ordered it. Well, and also I ordered them to solve a real practical problem as well. Cause we have a toddler, and at the time he was a baby. And we often got stuck, one of us, either my wife or I, on the couch holding our son, and we couldn't adjust the lights. You know, the other person half the time was asleep or working or something. And so I got it to solve a very real problem. Well, also, I think it was just after I'd written maybe it was the iOS 10 book. It seems like I was more interested in this stuff after Apple finally released a home app as a front end for HomeKit. And so basically, long story short, all the stars kind of came together and I got this Hue kit and I just instantly fell in love with it. I just absolutely loved what I could do with it. The color changing, but mostly I loved being able to dim the lights from anywhere, be able to turn those lights off. And I just started getting really deep into it.
For those who may be interested, the very, very basic element before we get into the book is you can buy one of these Hue lights. It has Wi-Fi built in. It's powered from the socket, right? You just threw the bulb in and it's on your Wi-Fi network. And then you can go to the home app if your iPhone's on the same app network and you can control it. Is that about right?
Yeah, there's also a hub you have to plug in to your router, but yeah, it's basically as easy as plugging a light bulb. And once you have these Hue lights set up, you can do things like you can tell and the great thing about Philips Hue is it works with a lot of stuff. So it doesn't just work with Apple, but also works with Alexa and Google Home and all these different if this then that, all these different systems.
That hub you plug in, is that a hub that does everything, or is it only control the lights? In other words, do you still have to buy a HomePod or an Apple TV to serve as a home hub for home automation?
Yes. Yeah. That's a little further into the book, but for the HomeKit side of things, for remote access and for home automations, you have to have a HomePod, an Apple TV, or a spare iPad sitting around. Okay. The Hue Hub is just good for controlling the lights, because I think most of the smarts are in the hub. And so really when you interact with one of the lights, you're really interacting with the hub, and the hub's sending the command to the lights.
So the home app on your iPhone talks to the home hub, say the Apple TV 4K. Apple TV 4K talks to the Hue Hub, and that controls the light.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So I just wanted to get that straight in my mind for those who are going to experiment.
people's heads are already probably spinning.
Yeah, I know. So what? So you mentioned that it was that you did this to solve a very specific problem, but mm-hmm. I noticed in your book you do a lot of photos of home wiring. Is your wife expressed any concerns about you going after the home wiring with a screwdriver?
No, because she generally acknowledges my competence. You know, it's funny. I got into stuff like that mostly because we own a house. I'm the man of the house, and I couldn't hire anybody to fix stuff around the house. So I ended up being my own personal Ron Swanson and going in and replacing switches and outlets and things like that that had gone bad. You know, the house we used to live in, it was from the 70s, and so all the wiring would start, you know, outlets and things like that just kind of wear out over time. Mm-hmm. And like light fixtures, all kinds of different stuff kept wearing out. And so I just had to fix it. And so when it came time, you know, when I started getting more into the home automation realm, you know, that was a second nature to me. And so what was really fun about this book was that I was actually able to showcase some of those fix-it skills around the house. And you know, if you've never done that sort of thing before, my book is a really good introduction to that, because I walk you through electrical safety and all that sort of thing, you know, and you'll learn how to switch out a light switch. You'll learn how to replace a thermostat. I don't go specifically into it, also discuss a bit switching outlets in your house and some of the techniques involved in that. So if you've ever been interested and doing those sorts of repairs around the house, this is an outstanding book to get for that.
Do you need a permit and then have a inspector check your work? I know it varies by state, but
no.
If you do your own homework, it's just on your own responsibility, right?
I don't know. This is Tennessee, and we're pretty light on the regulations around here. Mm-hmm. It's when we sold our last house, it wasn't an issue, and I'd done a lot of the electrical work myself. I mean, it's more of a local thing. Like, for instance, where I live now, I don't live in a city. I live very much out in the sticks. So the only regulation on that I'm aware of is that to get the initial wiring, you have to have an electrician and a permit and all that. And then once they get that hooked in, I think it's like the recommendation I usually get, because I'm looking at getting a building wired up, is, you know, get the electrical box in there, get a switch and get a light. And then once that's installed, you can, you know, you can do the rest yourself. But your mileage may vary. You should probably put a warning in the book about that. But, you know, you generally, you know, it's generally up to you to know your local regulations and such. And of course, if you rent, you know, rent your house, you're renting an apartment, you know, you're going to have other hoops you may have to jump through. But fortunately, you don't have to do any wiring to get started with home automation. You can start with something, you know, I recommend for a lot of people, if they're very skeptical about it, you can get like one of these smart outlets, like a Wemo or an Elgato Eve or something like that. And then whatever you plug, it just turns the outlet on and off, and you just plug that into the wall, and then you plug, some other gizmo into it, whether it's a lamp or a, sometimes it can be a coffee maker. Although
yeah, Jeff Gamet does that. He has Wemos.
Right. Or you know, a heater, a fan, and like a window air conditioner, things like that. You know, you can do a lot of stuff with those little outlets. So that's a good place to get started and not get overwhelmed. But if you have the money for it, I do recommend the Hue bulbs, because they're pretty easy, and it's just a whole world of fun things you can do. And my family loves them. In fact, when we moved to this new house, it took me a while to get things set up, in part because I knew I was doing this book, and so I wanted to walk through the setup of this new house with the book. So I could document all that. My wife kept asking me, when are you going to set the Hue bulbs back up? I hate having to get up to control the lights. And my kid really likes it. He loves it when I change our TV room to like blue and red and green.
So Siri, theater lighting, please. Is that about it?
Yeah, you can do things like that. You can set up in the home app what they call scenes. And scenes are very powerful in that it's like a macro for home automation. And you can tell you know, you can tell it to do several different things at once. So you can say, this bulb, change this bulb to 50% brightness, turn this one green, turn this one purple.
What if Siri doesn't understand you? Is there a particular way that you have to talk to Siri? Like if you say, Siri, please turn on theater lighting. Is that a phrase that is general enough, or do you have to speak to her in a very specific way to execute these commands?
So Siri is, as bad as Siri is, it's really good on the home automation front. But the catch to that is that you have to set things up in a specific way. And I explain all this stuff in the book. You know, there's certain names you want to use for things. Mm-hmm. But like in your case, so you would want to set up a scene called theater lighting, and then and usually Siri can understand that just fine. What you can do if you have a scene name that Siri has a hard time understanding, you can say set scene theater lighting, and that will do it. And Siri's really good about recognizing set scene. So you can tell things. Let me just try this. I've done this on a few podcasts, and sometimes
I recognize your voice as well as your wife's. Does that work?
It works fine on her phone. Usually we use one of the nice things about HomeKit is you can control stuff from Control Center. You can set up some favorite things. So that's usually how we do it. But so let's see, Siri. Hey Siri, turn my TV room blue.
Blue.
So I just turn my TV room blue and say, hey Siri, turn the lights in my TV room to 50%.
Okay. I set all of the TV room lights to 50%.
Okay, Siri, turn the heat on to 72 degrees. All right. I'm used to talking to Google. Hey Siri, turn the heat on to 72 degrees.
Okay. I set the My Echo Beat to 72 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, hey Siri, turn the heat off. Hey Siri, turn the heat off.
Anything for you, Josh.
Okay, that's a little weird.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, so for home automation, it works really well. Now, another little trick I go through in the book. This is very specific to smart outlets. So by default, so I had this problem. I plugged in a lamp in my office to a smart outlet, and I would tell Siri, hey, turn off my office light, and it wouldn't understand. And what I found was there's a setting you can change the type of an outlet. To like a light or a fan or a heater, things like that. And then after you do that, Siri will understand. So if you provide good metadata to HomeKit, Siri will work really well with it. And one of those things is to set up, is to understand some of the things I explained in the book right away is what I call the HomeKit hierarchy. And there are different levels of devices and organization in HomeKit. At the highest level is what you call a home, which is just, I mean, it can be a garage, it can be like some kind of outbuilding, it can be a barn, whatever, but usually it's your house. And so you have a home, and then in your home, you have, your home is split into different rooms, which correspond with rooms in your house. So like office, TV room, kitchen, living room, things like that. Those are some examples of rooms. And then you can group rooms into zones. And typically what Apple intends the zones for is like stuff like upstairs, downstairs. It's essentially a collection of rooms. And then for most practical purposes, the most base level is an accessory, which is the actual device itself. Now,
is it possible to gin up these accessories with Wemos only, or does full automation require you to go into some of these switches and rewire them? Or can you get by with a Wemo?
Yeah, you can get by with a Wemo. I mean, it really just depends on your comfort level. What I use a smart switch for, like when I've got wired into a wall, I have an Elgato Eve switch wired in my TV room, and that's connected to a light fixture that has a couple of Hue bulbs in it. And really, the only reason I even put the switch there is in case my son or somebody turns the power off to the Hue bulbs. And see, the problem with Hue bulbs is if they lose power, then you can't control them, because they have to have power to them to get the signal. Right. So I address a few different ways in the book to work around this. One of them is they sell covers for light switches that will just cover that switch up and then no one can operate it. That's a little weird. Another solution, some people wire up stuff in such a way where you can't even turn the light off anymore, which I think is a really bad idea. In case something goes wrong, you want to be able to turn that outlet off. Right. So the other alternative is to have like a smart switch. And let's see, Lutrion makes some, different companies make these. What you do, you wire that in, and then so if somebody has that light socket turned off and I can't control the Hue lights, then I can, from my phone, turn the switch on and then operate the Hue bulbs. It's not a perfect setup. I wish it were more like, it would just keep the power to them and then operate, which I guess is the thing I just warned against, right? But I mean, it's not a perfect setup, because you have to remember, oh yeah, okay, that switch is off, so now I have to turn that off. And I often get into like a bit of an argument with my 4-year-old, because he likes to turn those light bulbs off himself, and so if I'm messing with something, he'll just go and turn them off. Hey, cut that out. So that's generally what you want to use those for. The unfortunate thing, although the switches I have don't work with what they call a three-way switch, where you have a light has like two or three different switches that operate it. Unfortunately, I don't know of any smart switches that work with those, which is, in my house, almost all my lights are worked with three-way switches. So I don't have many places I can use the switches I do have.
A three-way switch? You mean like one at the bottom of the stairs and one at the top of the stairs so that you can control it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm hoping they work around that eventually, because that would really make my life a lot easier. And a lot of people, when they get started in this, they see how expensive the Hue bulbs are. And it's about $15 for the white bulbs, and it's closer to like 40 or 50 for the color bulbs. And they think, oh, geez, I couldn't afford to replace all the bulbs in my house with that. And the thing is, you don't really need to. One of the things I realized after I got the Hue bulbs is there's only like a handful of light bulbs I operate on a regular basis. And out of those, there's an even smaller handful where I really feel the need to be able to control them remotely, to dim them and all that. So, that's something you certainly could do. And over time, I've slowly been replacing all my light bulbs with Hue bulbs. But you don't really have to. And, and one of the things I teach in the book, too, you could smarten up all your switches and your bulbs and all that. But, I've been at this for a while. I've written a book about it. I haven't got that intensive about it. Now, some people, every room in the house has got like a motion detector, and you walk in, the lights come on, and at a certain time this happens and all this and that. And, I've done some experiments with that, and sometimes it's useful and sometimes it's just kind of weird. So it really just depends on your own needs. Now, some people have
So let's talk about the design and the needs in the second half.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk to you about security too. But right now, we got to take a break. Folks, we'll be right back in 60 seconds. I'm chatting with Josh Centers about home automation. Stay with us. We will be right back. Hi, this is John Marcellaro with the Mac Observer. This episode is brought to you by Jamf Now. Jamf Now helps you set up, manage, and protect your Apple devices on demand. We all know it's pretty easy to keep track of your own Mac, iPad, or iPhone, but what about the other Apple devices in your organization? As a business grows, so does its collection of devices, making it increasingly harder to manage everyone's iPad, iPhone, and Mac. This is especially true if employees are in different locations. So with Jamf Now, you can check real-time inventory, configure Wi-Fi and email settings, deploy applications, protect sensitive company data, and even lock or wipe your devices from anywhere. Jamf now manages and protects your devices so you can focus on your business instead, and no IT experience needed. All you Background Mode listeners can start securing your business today, setting up the first three devices for free forever. You can add more devices for just $2 a month per device. So create your own free account today at jamf.com/BGM. That's JAMF.com/BGM. And now back to the show. And we're back. I'm chatting with Josh Centers. So we were talking about getting carried away or having a perspective about how to approach. Do you have any suggestions on how to start doing the initial planning? You mentioned in your book that it's a good idea to have a specific problem you want to solve in mind. Is it a natural thing to go from solving one problem to sort of gently expanding, or what do you recommend?
Well, you know, to paraphrase Hunter S. Thompson, once you get locked into a serious home automation collection, the tendency is to push it as far as you can. So one of the things that I've found is that it's very empowering. So once you solve a handful of problems around your house, you know, so let's say, you know, some lights you want to control easily, remotely, or, you know, you replace your, front door lock with some kind of smart lock that you can check and operate remotely. You know, you start thinking of more problems you can solve. And, once you really work through this book, your only limitations largely would be your budget. You know, there are some, I mean, in thinking of the home automation, you can get extremely advanced, and this book is really just sort of the 0 to 60 guide. You know, I'm hoping to do some follow up, especially on tidbits in the future with some more advanced stuff. You know, like, for instance, I want to figure out how to do a HomeKit enabled butter churner, but, that's a joke for Kelly, by the way. So
Kelly Gubant.
Yeah. She was on another podcast and she was saying she was how she was a little skeptical of technology, but she didn't want to go way out there like Josh Centers and start churning her own butter. So I had to say something about that. So anyway.
Well, I think people get a little bit put off by home automation because they see it as sort of a boondoggle that they don't really need. And then there's the security element of it. And there's this constant specter of, you know, is somebody going to hack my front door at 3 in the morning, or is somebody going to take control of my house and have dazzling lights? And is my house going to become haunted? You know, so.
Right. And this is all stuff I cover pretty thoroughly in the book. And it's funny, for on one hand, this is the most technical book I've written for Take Control. On the other hand, it's the least technical book, because a lot of this stuff is just very simple common sense sort of stuff. But you just have to know how to think about it. You know, for instance, so going back to the security thing, you know, one of the advantages of HomeKit, Apple does have a good record with security. There's a lot of stuff you can't do with home automation unless you have two-factor authentication enabled. That being said, HomeKit isn't flawless. There was a security vulnerability.
You have to have iCloud keychain turned on, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of
one thing that kind of nags at me, because I'm kind of skeptical about the idea of having my keychain in Apple's hands, even if it's encrypted.
Right. I've never had a problem with it, but I mean, you could just not store your passwords and stuff in it and just use it for HomeKit.
Can you have multiple keychains and say, I'm going to assign this specific purpose keychain to my home automation and have a separate keychain for your banking? Can you do that?
You know, I'm not terribly sure. I don't think you can, but don't quote me on that. I'd have to look into that. Okay. So for the security front, and I had a reader email about this morning, so I'll just go ahead and address this issue here. So the Elgato Eve stuff, that's 100% HomeKit. It only works through HomeKit. But most of the stuff, like, for instance, Philips Hue, Echo Bee, iHomes stuff, most of it can either work through the manufacturers own API and their own internet connected, whatever for that, their own service for that. And I can work through HomeKit. And so one of the things you can do if you're paranoid about that sort of thing, you know, for instance, my iHome, I have a switch made by iHome. It's like an outlet. And, I'm not signed into their online service. I don't use their app. I just use HomeKit because I was able to do that. Now, with the Philips Hue, you have to set it up through their app and then connect it to their service. Well, you don't have to connect it. You don't have to connect to their service. You don't have to create an account with them. And if you have, you can log out of it and separate it from your system. So even if someone could hack into that, they couldn't mess with your lights. Although at that level, you know, I've never heard of a security problem with Philips Hue, because hacking someone's lights just probably isn't that exciting for most people. You're not going to make any serious money doing that. Like you could hacking their front door or their bank account or something. So another thing too, I recommend for people is to, never get to the point where you can't dial it back. One of the things I love about the Hue bulbs is if I unplug the hub, they're just normal light bulbs and you can just turn them on and off. They're just overpriced light bulbs. And it's a little different with my thermostat because it's wired into the wall. But I'm looking at my old Honeywell thermostat. So, you know, if the Echo Bee started going crazy, I could just rip it out of the wall and replace it. No problem.
Does HomeKit work with Nest?
No, it doesn't. Probably because Google owns Nest. Mm. Now with iOS, I think 11.3, this is supposed to be iOS 11. So up until now, every HomeKit device, they all have to be approved by Apple. They have to go through a testing and certification process, and they have to have a special chip installed. Well, with iOS 11.3, they no longer have to have the special chip. So at least in theory, a lot of these devices that don't support HomeKit can get HomeKit support. So
achieving what they need to achieve in software? Is this what's going on? They're replacing the chip with software that maybe encryption or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the nitty gritty on that is. I do know it's supposed to make it easier for, because that's been one of the big complaints.
I've slowing down the adoption quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, it's expensive. It makes it so. It's a much more expensive process than getting approval for like Alexa or Google Home or these other services. So a lot of stuff just skipped HomeKit entirely. Wemo.
That's a shame. Yeah. Apple does it right. Yeah. They require a hardware chip. They do certification and then nobody comes to the party.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of very sketchy Internet of Things devices on the market. So, even if you do have the occasional vulnerability with HomeKit, like we saw late last year, at least you know there's someone, there's a responsible entity that will fix it, as Apple did. A lot of these fly-by-night devices people get, like security cameras, DVRs, things like that. These things are notorious for getting owned and then becoming part of a botnet. So, you could have these devices around your house being used to mine bitcoins or DDoS other servers or just whatever someone wants that botnet for. So with HomeKit you at least know somebody, a lab has looked at this stuff, they've given it once over.
Is an internet connection necessary? I mean, if you're out traveling and you forgot to lock the front door, you want to set the thermostat down, mm-hmm. You can log into your home network through the home app and you can change a scene. But what mm-hmm. if you sever that internet connection? Can you still manage your home internally with the hub and your phone?
Well, some things only take, like some things only require Bluetooth, right? So like I think all of Elgato's devices are Bluetooth only. So even when your internet's out, that stuff still works, which is one of the advantages of Bluetooth devices. The Philips, I think most of my stuff works when the internet is out.
Did you cover that in the book?
Yeah, I think I do. So, Generally, so let's say your internet is out, and by internet being out, I mean at the ISP level, your router right. is not getting service. Now, if your router is borked, things probably won't work, at least your Wi-Fi devices. So there's two kinds of HomeKit devices, I should say. There's Wi-Fi and there's Bluetooth connected ones. And so your Bluetooth devices are going to be a little less sensitive, things like that. The Wi-Fi devices do depend on, you know, having a router there and having that connection. Generally around the house, you're not going to have problems even if your internet connection flakes out. But now when you're away from home, then yeah, if your internet's down, you're not going to be able to access that stuff.
So I have another question. Well, 5 minutes ago, you were talking to Siri and giving us some test cases. Mm-hmm. How were you talking to Siri? Were you using a HomePod?
No, that's my iPhone.
Can you use your Apple Watch to talk to Siri?
Yes, but I don't particularly recommend it because at least my Apple Watch is super slow. Now, I do talk about it in the book, and there is a home app for the Apple Watch, which is kind of neat because you can use the digital crown to adjust the brightness of your lights and things like that. So it's kind of cool. I just don't find stuff with the Apple Watch to be very reliable, so I don't recommend it. But yeah, in theory, it's possible.
One of the things that Brian Chaffin here at the Mac Observer insists on is he wants to be able to talk to his house in a very relaxed kind of way instead of having to pick up a phone, you know, mm-hmm. or talk to your watch. He just wants it to be, you know, always listening. I think there's a whole technology wrapped around a phrase called always listening, something like that.
Always on. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, stuff like Alexa and Google Home, things like that.
Right.
HomePod.
How do you feel about that?
You know, I generally agree. I don't have a HomePod, largely because I think they're kind of overpriced, but that's another episode. But, I do have some, those Google Home speakers around my house. I'm generally happy with them. Now, I will say, you know, I say this in the book too. HomeKit is the most advanced of the home automation systems, like this, you know, so, like Google Home, Amazon Alexa, they both have their own ways of integrating various third-party devices so you can control them with your voice. But by comparison, they're extremely rudimentary. And Google's relies very heavily on if this, then that for things. Like, you can't create a scene with Google Home. You have to use it if this, then that. Now, I generally like the Google Homes. Sometimes they're a little stubborn about things. Let me try to talk to mine right now and see if it'll fix my lights in my TV room. Okay, Google, turn my TV room white.
Sorry, I'm not sure which device you'd like to control.
See, so it's doing. Okay, Google, turn the lights in my TV room white.
Sure, changing four lights to white.
Okay, so that's one of those commands I have a hard time with, and I was having a hard time with it last night because my kid loves it when I change the TV room lights between like blue and red and stuff, and my wife hates it, so I need a way to quickly change them back to normal. Well, Siri, when you tell Siri to turn them white, she literally turns them like white. And Google's a little smarter in that it will change them to a regular light bulb color that isn't quite white. If you get my drift, like it's not totally white. Mm-hmm. It's got a little yellow in there, I guess. But a lot of times, for whatever reason, Google Home does not recognize when I tell it to turn the lights white. And it's like, oh, I don't know how to do that. Like, yeah, you do. And then you repeat it a few times. You have to say it different ways. And it's just funny. Sometimes it recognizes it and sometimes it doesn't. So all these virtual assistants have their own little quirks. Like, well, one thing with the Google Home. So one of the cool things about it is if you connect it to a Chromecast, it could work as a Chromecast transmitter, so you can tell it to play a TV show or switch channels if you have YouTube TV or something. And so my kid really likes Power Rangers, right? And so, but he likes to switch between all. He's seen every single version of the Power Rangers like 50 times. He likes to switch between them all the time. And so I'll tell Google Home, I'll say, "Hey, turn on the Power Rangers," and it'll choose this very specific version of Power Rangers called Power Rangers SPD, where they're like some kind of space police or something. And then I'll tell it to put on a different version of Power Rangers, and it, guess what? It starts playing the exact same one. It was just like it's stuck on this one version of Power Rangers. I don't know. There's someone at Google who apparently just thinks that's the best Power Rangers version, but it just has, you know, it just does very, like, Siri will just misunderstand you. Google will understand you correctly and then just do something totally random that you don't expect.
So these are the adventures of the early days of home automation. Well, we're about out of time. So you've written the book, Take Control Books, called Apple Home Automation. It's www.takecontrolbooks.com. It's $14.99 for a PDF. There's no DRM. And I recommend anybody who's interested in home automation at the least bit, even if you just want to experiment with bulbs, check out this book, kind of learn about what's going on with home automation and figure out where you want to be in the spectrum. Is that about right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, and this is a book that'll take you from, even if you don't know anything about it, you start page one, and I'll guide you through the whole thing. And yeah, just everything builds upon the last thing.
I've looked through it, and this is the best. Thanks for the copy, by the way. This sure is the best book on home automation I've seen. It's comprehensive. It covers all the bases. You're blunt about security. You're blunt about how to approach the situation. You know, it doesn't gloss over anything. It's got pictures of wiring and tips about safety and how to, you know, label your connectors and get a thermostat installed. So, I mean, if you really want to roll up your sleeves and get into it, or if you would just want to experiment with some bulbs for starters, this is a great introduction. So thanks for writing it.
Oh, hey, I'm more than happy to. Yeah, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I'm very pleased with how the book came out. And but, you know, HomeKit really lends itself to being structured really well. So, you know, I got to thank the people at Apple for really thinking through this stuff and coming up with such a comprehensive and relatively easy to use system.
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery when you first think about it, because there's so many. It's do-it-yourself kind of thing, and you have to be kind of handy with some things, and you have to understand the architecture, and you have to understand what it is you want to try to solve and then fit it all into a system that makes sense to you, and then have it be safe and terminable if you want to shut it down. So I recommend this book strongly if anybody's interested in it. So thanks. And thanks for being on the show to talk about it.
Sure. Anytime, John.
Tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish.
Oh, you can email John. No, I'm on Twitter at jcenters, J-C-E-N-T-E-R-S. And if you really insist, you can send me emails at josh@tidbits.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, this was delightful. And it's great to have you back on the show again. And it was a lot of fun. So thanks.
Thanks for having me again, John.
Folks, you've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you again next week. Thank you.